היה חלום. יעקב אבינו had a dream. He's laying on Har Moriah and he had a dream. והנה סולם מוצב ארצה. Jacob's ladder. וראשו מגיע שמיימה. The ladder was on the ground. It was firmly rooted on the ground. It was placed on the floor. And the top of the ladder reached to the heavens. והנה מלאכי אלוקים. And angels of God olim ויורדים בו. We're going up and down, ascending and descending on the ladder. V'hinei Hashem nitzav alav v'yomar, Ani Hashem Elokei Avraham Avicha v'Elokei Yitzchak. I am the Lord your God, I'm the God of your fathers. Ha'aretz asher ata shochev alav, the place that you're laying on, the land that you're on, l'cha etanenu zaracha, this is for you, for your children. Kadosh Baruch Hu continues and tells Yaakov Avinu, Parat Yama Vakedma, you're going to spread all over the world. Your children, your descendants are going to be the vehicles for godliness to bring the message of Kadosh Baruch Hu, the light of truth, thank you, of Torah, to the whole world. Manara Makom Hazeh, this is the place, so this is the place of God's dwelling, V'zeh Shar HaShamayim. There's so much to say on Parshas Vayetze, it's almost daunting to even begin speaking about it. I wanted to maybe just spend a few minutes on this one pasuk and mine this pasuk for some insights that Hashem Kevyachol, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is giving to Yaakov Avinu, some important fundamentals in service of Hashem. Hashem says, listen, Yaakov, here's if you want to do it, here's how you do it. If you want to be close to me, if you want to understand me, if you want to draw yourself near to my presence, so you're at Shar HaShamayim, you feel the awe, you're there at the gateway in the Beis HaMikdash, in the place where the temple is going to be built, and in this dream, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals some fundamentals of Avodas Hashem to Yaakov Avinu. First and foremost, Yaakov Avinu's dream, the first thing he sees, V'hinei Sulam. First thing we have to know in Avodas Hashem, the first thing we have to know from starting from zero, starting off. Here's the introduction to Avodas Hashem, V'hinei Sulam. I remember years and years and years ago, the first time I heard this idea to say B'Shem Amro and bring Geula to the world was from Rabbi Fran, probably 15 years ago, 14 years ago. V'hinei Sulam. That in life there's no such thing as standing still. Rule number one in Yiddishkeit, rule number one in Avoda, in service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing as stagnation. No such thing as staying in the same place. That's why the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash is on an inclined plane. It's a ramp. Because Avoda is something which can't be stagnant. It can't be something which is static. It has to be dynamic. By definition, we're either going up or we're going down. In the words of Shlomo HaMelech, the 15th chapter of Mishlei, Orachaim Lamala Lamaskil. There's a path of life which is prepared. The path of life, the path to enlightenment, to greatness, is prepared. Above, Lamala Lamaskil, for the one who's intellectual, the one who's smart, the one who's a maskil, the one who gets it, the one who understands what life is about, realizes that real knowledge, that real growth comes above. It has to be above. Orachaim Lamala Lamaskil. There's a path of life which is prepared, which awaits above for the maskil. L'man sur misha'ol mata. And if we don't strive above to attach ourselves to that level beyond that, where we are right now, if we're not growing upward, l'man sur misha'ol mata, then we're going to be heading down, necessarily. It's like an escalator, either going up or we're going down. V'hinei sulam, that's the first thing Yaakov Avinu sees in this dream, is that life is a ladder. We're either going up the ladder or we're going down the ladder. We're either growing every day, every week, every month closer to Hashem, getting stronger in our davening and in our mitzvot and our chasadim, becoming more selfless and less selfish. We're either becoming more sensitive to other people's needs, more charitable, doing more acts of you know, being courageous, so to speak, and reaching out to more people, trying to make more friends and expand our sphere of friends and our vulnerability in opening ourselves to people, or it's going the other way. Says the Vilna Gaon over there in Mishlei in the 15th parak, Ha'adam nikra holech. The definition of man or of woman, of human being, is that we're moving. We have to be moving. Shetzarich lelech tamid medarga ladarga. We have to be going from level to level. Vim lo yale lamala. If we're not going upwards, yared mata mata chas v'shalom. Then necessarily we're going to be heading downward, spiraling downward. Ki iyef shar shi amod bedarga achas. V'hinei sulam. Rule number one. Hashem says to Yaakov Avinu, the first thing Yaakov Avinu dreams about when he closes his eyes there in Har Moriah, the very place where Avram and Yitzchak stood at the Akedah, the very place where the Gemara tells us, Chazal tells us that Hashem fashioned Adam from the earth, that place which was going to be in the future, the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the headquarters of Avoda, the headquarters of prophecy, of clarity, of God consciousness, of God awareness, Mamnora HaMakom HaZeh, how intense, how clear I am right now that this is the place of God. Hashem tells Yaakov, Hinei Sulam. Number one, Hinei Sulam. Life is about a ladder. We're either going up or we're going down. This Sulam that Yaakov Avinu dreams about is Mutzav Arsa, Barosho Magia Shamaima. See, in spirituality, in Ruchnias, it's very easy to be taken away. It's very easy to be swept up in moments. We spoke about this earlier in the year. You know, Yom Narayim, the excitement, the passion, the involvement, the singing and the dancing. We can be ecstatic. We can be swept up in an intensive movement of spirituality, Ruchnias, that sometimes we can get lost in Shemaim. We can get lost in the Ruchnias. We can get lost in the spirituality. Sometimes people can get so carried away in their Avoda, in their Ruchnias, in their Tefillah, and whatever it may be, that we lose touch a little bit with reality. See, Hashem is telling Yaakov Avinu, perhaps, if we're using this as a remez, again, rolling the dice and using this as a little bit of a understand it's a drasha. But if we're trying to map out a pathway of Avodas Hashem for ourselves from learning Torah, from reading Parsha, so it has to be real tough. So I was reading Shnai Mikra this week, and that's what I'm thinking. How am I going to be close to Hashem after this week's Parsha? How can I learn from this Shnai Mikra, from this week's Shnai Mikra? I said, Hinei Sulam, number one. Number two, Mutzav Arza. Any movement toward Ruchnius, any movement toward attaching to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has to begin with us being rooted here in this world. An example. There's a story about the Alter Rebbe. Who heard of the Alter? Who knows the Alter Rebbe? Come on, even if you don't know it, you can lie. who knows the Baal HaTanya? Okay, a little more. Now, who knows if Shneur Zalman of Liadi? So, they're all the same person. The Alter Rebbe means he's the first Rebbe of Lubavitch. The first Lubavitch Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch, was one of the main friends / disciples of the Maggid of Mizrich, who was the successor to the Baal Shem Tov. The Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch, Shneur Zalman of Liadi, wrote the Tanya, which is the encyclopedia. It's an encyclopedia of Jewish philosophy, of Hasidus. When Rebbe Elimelech Lezhens saw the Tanya, he said, whoa, such a great God, such a big God, and such a small book, it's unbelievable. So Shneur Zalman of Liadi, who, you know, was the grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, the grandfather, the founder of one of the most important spiritual movements, a Mekubal, somebody who was Kula Ruchnius, was the epitome of spirituality, of attachment to Hashem. A well-known story that's often told about the Alter Rebbe, when his son, who also became the Rebbe after him, had a child. One night in the Alter Rebbe's house, that son was sitting and learning, late at night. He was sitting and learning Kabbalah, perhaps writing a maim or writing a discourse, a Hasidic discourse. And the baby woke up and his crib was crying. And the Alter Rebbe's son was so attached in his learning, his state, with such intensity, such, you know, so taken, so swept away with his learning, you know, I didn't hear the baby crying. And soon the baby quieted down. Later on, Alter Rebbe's son, who was the Mittler Rebbe, was surprised when he was going to sleep and he passed by a child's room and he saw that his father, Shneur Zalman, was sitting holding the child, cradling the child. And he said, Tati, what are you doing? So he said, when a baby cries, you have to hear it. It doesn't matter if you're learning. It doesn't matter if you're davening. What good is learning and davening? What good is your ruchnius, is your learning and davening, if you don't hear a baby crying? See, if we want to have Rosh HaMagiyah Shemayim, we want to have our head in the clouds and be Ruchni people, be spiritual people, be people who are like totally thinking the whole world, seeing the world in the highest, most beautiful spiritual way. That's great. But we have to have the Sulam Mutzav Arza. It has to be rooted here. A well-known statement of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, they say it about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they say it about Rav Shlomo Kalman, they say it about Rav Kook, they say it about the Chavetz Chaim, they say it about everybody. I think that really there's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the first one. That my ruchnis is the other person's gashmias. Meaning my spirituality is making sure that you have your needs, your physical needs are taken care of. That's ruchnis. See, for you, for let's say I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm tired. So I have to go get a drink, I have to go to the, you know, use the restaurant, to go get a bite to eat, I have to go, you know, go to sleep and shower. Those are my physical needs. But if I'm a guest in your home, my physical needs become your spiritual needs. That becomes your ruchni. You're a guest in our home. So whether or not you want, you know, one matzo ball, two matzo balls, which really has to do with, you know, your appetite, your gashmi, becomes my ruchni. It becomes my spiritual opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be more godlike. To perform an act of chesed for another person is an act of spiritual, is an act of spirituality. One time, a chassidim asked the previous Baba of a Rebbe, ready? Chusi again aleinu. They asked Reb Naftali. They said to him, chassidim were sitting around and they were fabring. They were having a tish late Friday night, and afterwards they had an opportunity to talk a little bit. It was already while he was the Rav Atzair, when his father Reb Shlomo was still the Rebbe. So he was a little bit more approachable then. You know, you're sitting with the chassidim afterwards. And they asked, Nur Abnaftul, what's ruchnius? What is ruchnius? So Naftali said, you know what ruchnius is, you know what spirituality is? Anything that you do for zich, for the other person. Anything that you do for another person, that's ruchnius. See, because that's a spirituality where we're not detached from this world. Where we're not detached from the artsa. It's good to have Rosh HaMagiyah Shemayim. It's good to daven with such intensity that, like, you know, ki'ilu, as if the world is being destroyed around you, you wouldn't know. And the Gemara says, the fifth parak in Brachos, that when a person is davening Shana Esrei, that if a king comes to greet you in the middle, that you shouldn't even respond to the king. And what do the Rishonim say? It's not that you shouldn't respond. Like, how could you not respond? Meaning, your davening should be so intense you don't even realize the king is saying hello. And then if there's a snake wrapping itself around your feet, you won't even, you know, be startled by it. How could that be? What do you mean? You're not going to try to save yourself? One of the guys in Shira asked me, "Oh, but what if you should give up your life for a poisonous snake for Sadavan Marv?" Yeah. So I said, "No. The idea is, I think this one of the Rishonim explained that our tefillah should be so intense that we don't even realize that the king is saying shalom. We don't even realize that the snake is wrapping itself around our feet. That's holy. That's beautiful." But if a baby's crying, that you have to hear. But if somebody's hungry, that you have to attend to. You don't have to look very far in the Torah to see an example. When Avraham Avinu is sitting outside of his tent, Vayera Elav Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Bikacholim, Vayera Elav Hashem, Hashem appears to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was in a deep meditative state. Avraham Avinu was in the ultimate state of Dveikus. He was totally connected to Hashem. At that moment, his Shemana Esrei was like the highest Ne'ilah Shemana Esrei that we could ever envision. Vayera Elav Hashem. V'hinei, whoa, hold on a second. The Shlosh Anashim Niksavim Alav. Avraham Avinu notices that there are three beggars, three pagans, three filthy, filthy is an adjective, Arab travelers. They were like, better. They had to wash their feet of idolatry before they came into his house. They were dirty. They're dirty physically, and they were filled with idolatry. They're Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And yet Avraham Avinu, in the middle of his meditative state of dveikus, of davening the deepest Shemana Esrei, drops what he's doing with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and runs to take care of the needs of these malachim. His ruchnis became, their gashmis became his ruchnis. And he runs and he says to Sarah, Mahari, quickly go make cakes. And Avraham Avinu goes and kills three livestock just to be able to give the best cut to each one. That's ruchnius. That's an act of spirituality. That's an act of that itself right there is the epitome of what we're talking about. That there's a sulam mutzav arza, that it's rooted in this world, in the physical needs of this world. See, people often think, I don't know here, but often when we're introduced to like something beautiful in Yiddishkeit, it happens often in the Shana Aleph experience. You see something beautiful. You go to Meir Sha'arim. You go to Rechavi for Shabbos. You go to a beautiful family, an Erlicha family. I remember the first time I ever experienced it. The truth is, it wasn't in Israel. It was in high school yet. We went to Rabbi Yitzchak Torsky's house for a Chanukah Masiba. The first time I'd ever been in a house without television being the center of the universe. Like, there's a lot of books. There's a lot of books everywhere. Even in the bathroom, there are like books about science and karate and history and whatever. Everywhere. There are books everywhere. You have a great opportunity to learn with him. It's an amazing thing. But I remember when I was in Yeshiva, I was in Shalvim, and like you're just going to people's houses and you're being exposed to this new idea of Yiddishkeit, and the natural thing to say, I want this. I see this as something real. This is something powerful. This is something beautiful. Felt it first. I mentioned it here a couple weeks ago in Slichos. There was some guy in Shalom holding onto a bookshelf, crying. He was screaming and crying. I said, "What did this guy do so bad? He wasn't in 12th grade of me. What did this guy do so bad that he's screaming his brain like?" And I remember thinking to myself, like, "Oh my gosh, I got to go headlong into this." And it's very easy. I mean, at least I went right into it. That you can get so wrapped up in it, in the learning, in the davening, in the tefillah, and the hesbodus, and the taking on new things and extra things, and right away a garfel, and right away extra mix, and whatever the equivalent would be, right away extra, more. It's very important that while we're reaching for the heavens and we're reaching, that the arosho should be magia shanaima, to maintain the element of mutzav arza. I remember when my mother came to visit, my mother like couldn't, I mean it was a bad scene. You're not taking care of yourself, your clothing is dirty, you're not shaving, your haircut, in order to be a spiritual person, you don't have to like abandon, everything that you always were involved in. That a little bit, I don't know if that's where some of you may be holding, but often when we're introduced to new ruchnius, so we get so excited by it, we want to just go all the way, and that's amazing. But while we're going Rosh HaMegiyah Shemayim, we should never forget to maintain the element of Mutzav Arza as well. That's the second remez, the second Eitzah that we can get from the Chalom, from the dream, from the vision of Yaakov Avinu. And finally, on this Sulam, Mutzav Arza, Rosh HaMegiyah Shemayim, there's Malachei Elokim Olim V'Yordim Bo. We have to understand and realize that on this ladder of life where we're here in the physical world trying to strive to be spiritual people and combine those two worlds and find the shleimus in life, we have to realize that the Malachim Elokim, that in Avodas Hashem we're going to have opportunities and situations and find ourselves in circumstances where Olim V'Yordim Bo. Say the Talmid in the Baal Shem Tov, Olim V'Yordim Bo, not just the angels are going up and down on the ladder, but Yaakov Avinu himself saw Olim V'Yordim Bo, that in his own Avodas Hashem they're going to be ups and they're going to be downs. There are going to be times of ascent, and there are going to be times of descent. There are going to be times when things are up and things are going great and everything's clicking, and you feel like he's achieving his goal, he's hitting the mark, and there are going to be times in our lives where we feel like, why do I keep stumbling? Why do I keep falling short of my goals? Why do I keep falling into these old traps and these old habits and these old negative things? Why am I so far away? And we have to understand that in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, it's as much about dealing with perceived failure and stumbling and downs and being uninspired and being far off and feeling like we're missing the mark. It's as much to do with that as it is hitting the mark, feeling like I'm hitting my stride, like I'm doing everything right, like I'm succeeding, like I'm going up. Judaism is not just about ups. It's not just about feeling inspired. It's not so much what am I doing when I'm inspired as it is what am I doing when I'm uninspired. Not so much how devout is my davening when I'm feeling charged and pumped after a great fuel, after a great speaker, after a great sunset, at the Kotel, as I am on a, for me last week davening chakras every day in Newark Airport at the, holding up to my carry-on luggage, hoping that the girl listening to her iPod is not going to tell the police on me that I'm putting on tefillin there, by my gate. Those moments, those moments of feeling like my chakras getting shorter and shorter every single day, my mincha getting more and more like closer to shkia and like almost forgetting. Those are times where like, okay, when the chips are down and I'm feeling a yirida in my own ruchnius, when I'm feeling like the angels are going, you know, your dimbo, when I'm feeling like I'm... So then how am I reacting? How am I dealing with this perceived failure, with this perceived yirida? Right there is the litmus test of where... You know, when I'm up, when things are great, like when I said, during the Kiyah Shofar, of course, it's all good. Right? We talked about this in Cheshvan. You know, when I'm sitting in the Sukkah, in the Tzil Dimei Musa, it's all good. In a couple of weeks, if you're sitting by the nearest Hanukkah, you feel the glow of the hidden light. It's all good. But the question is, what about when it's not all good? What about when we're feeling that it's your dimbo? So you have to realize that part of this sulam, inherent part of this life, of this world, is yordim just as much as it is olim. Olim vi yordimbo. That when there's an aliyah, there's going to be yirida. When there's yirida, there's going to be aliyah. That life is not like driving through Cleveland. Life is like driving in Northern California, which I wasn't zochah to be in last week, but it's like going up and down on hills. Big ups and sometimes big downs. The idea is not so much how are we dealing with the success, not so much about what am I doing when things are going right, because when things are going right, things are going right. There's nothing chokhmah to get it right when it's right, when it's all good. But it's more about how am I dealing with the situation when things are going wrong, when things are not going 100% the way I'm hoping they would go. Everybody heard of Yitzhak Perlman? Come on, you saw the old Rechol Tzumtzum, right? Exactly, right? Or you have a parent who likes Masterpiece Theater on Channel 13 and made you watch the Yitzhak Perlman special on Channel 13. Or you had a grandmother who was very unpleased with your taste of music in, let's say, 10th through 12th grade and bought you the Fiddler's House when you were a sophomore. No? You didn't have such an event? Or they're like getting very sick of all your music and like one thing. Rage Against the Machine, what are you so angry about? You come from an upper middle class white Jewish family. You go to a suburban, you know, co-ed private high school. Where is this angst against? What machine are you so upset about? You can't even vote. You're too young to vote. So anyway, Yitzhak Perlman, I was introduced to it already during those years. Years and years and years ago. And the truth is, this ma'aseh takes place in 1995. Yitzhak Perlman is the world's greatest violinist. He's the top. He's the world's virtuoso violinist. You know, read anything online or in any books about the world of classical music, he fills stadiums, he fills theaters all over the world. Now, what's interesting is that he's an Israeli guy, he's a Yid. And when he was a little boy, a little child growing up in Eastern Europe, he always wanted to be a soccer player. But when he was a little kid, he got struck with polio, low latent. He was as an 8-year-old. And he lost the use of his legs. And his parents felt very bad for him because here this kid loved playing soccer more than anything, and he wasn't able to continue. I mean, he was confined to a wheelchair, and he walks. He schleps himself around with big braces on his legs. Anybody ever seen? You ever seen this film on TV or not? He has braces on his legs. But you know, like, no matter how wealthy he is, no matter how great of a violinist he is, like, technology can only do so much. And the Velcro and with metal and with, you know, splints and whatever it may be, and braces. And on his arms, he uses these crutches that, you know, he slips his arms into. And on his forearm, you know, he slips it in and heals on, and he, you know, literally drags himself around. Anyways, in 1995, it was November 1995, this month, Yitzhak Perlman was filming a special for Channel 13. He was going to be recording an album. That was going to be sold, that was going to be, you know, made into an album that was going to put out as a disc or whatever. And it was at Lincoln Center in Avery Fisher Hall. You ever been there before?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good play, huh? Well, every musician's dream, to play Lincoln Center, Avery Fisher Hall. Packed house. The full 52-piece orchestra, all backing him up, and he was supposed to take center stage. The beginning of the concert, whatever it is, the curtain opens up and Yitzhak Perlman schleps himself out from the side, from backstage. As he's working himself across the stage, it looks like it's excruciating. I mean, it's not comfortable to watch somebody struggling. I mean, you go to Camp Hask, it's not comfortable to watch other Yidden or other human beings struggling because of a physical disability. It's not a comfortable sight. It's something which no one, it's like awkward for everyone. Yitzhak Perlman schleps himself across the stage, takes center stage, he gets a rousing applause, and takes off his braces. settles himself comfortably in his chair, takes off his braces and takes his violin, puts it under his chin, takes his bow, and he nods to the orchestra, and he begins. And it was beautiful. It's a work of art. Even though it's like really good classical music, I don't appreciate it so much, but it's a work of art. You can't not be taken by its beauty. And a full 52-piece orchestra, it was unbelievable. About halfway through the two-hour concert, or what would be the two sets of a two-hour concert, like the worst possible thing you can imagine, like the most awkward thing in the world, like as if like the record's playing and everybody's dancing, and then like the record scratches and everybody freezes. Bam! In the middle of a song, in the middle of a movement, one of the four strings of the violin pops. It broke a string in the middle. I hang around with Chaim Dover a lot. Chaim Dover pops the string and the guitar, hey, it's all good, he keeps playing. You know, it doesn't really affect too much what he's doing, and at the end of the song he changes it. You know, you're playing, you have a whole band, everybody's singing and dancing, but here, you're talking about, you're down one out of four, you're down 25% of your strings there. And I don't know so much about classical music, but you know, you need those four strings. There's only so much you can do without the four strings. The entire movement, all the music that everybody has in front of them, all those notes and all those books are all based on the different levels of sound that are coming out of that person's violin. Bam! In the middle of the whole thing, everybody freezes. Everybody, like you can imagine, like you know, your face gets hot when you're embarrassed for somebody else and like nervous for somebody else. You're like, okay, please, I should just. Let something happen. Like, let this get taken care of. And like everyone behind him, the whole orchestra also like kind of freezes. And you can imagine the beads of sweat on this guy's face. And you know, the second goes by. There's a serious pause. And he's holding his bow, and he just kind of like looks like he's deep in thought for a second. But then he turns to the orchestra, like repositions his fingers, nods to them, and continues to play for the next hour. And while he was playing, you could see the intensity and the concentration, the focus on his face was out of control. It was like he was rewriting all the different notes to play in his violin, even though he was down a string. Something unbelievable. I mean, the article I got offline from the Houston Chronicle described it as the most miraculous feat in music history. I don't know if that's true. I have no idea. I just think it's cool, like when, you know, I guess if you met to play the guitar behind his head, I think it's the coolest thing. This was, like I said, was the most unbelievable feat in music history. The place went crazy. He rewrote an entire symphony, and 52-piece orchestra went along with it, even though the unthinkable happened. The most awkward, like, it just thrown him off completely. But he kept going, and at the end of the concert, it was incredible. People realized that they were part of something very special. And the place goes wild. Everybody's clapping. Everybody gives him a big round of applause. Standing ovation. Yitzchak Froman puts down his violin and his bow, and he schleps his braces and starts tying them on again, and picks up his crutches and hoists himself out of the chair and starts to schlep himself off stage. But halfway across stage, as he's about to leave, he motions that he wants to say something, and the whole place goes quiet. Yitzchak Froman turns to the people and he says, you know, sometimes it's the job of an artist to make music with whatever it is that he has left. He nodded his head again and continued to schlep himself off stage. Sometimes it's the job of an artist to continue to make music with whatever it is that he has left. And sometimes when we're trying to accomplish, when we're trying to achieve our goals, when we want to get to whatever it is we want to get to, on the way we stumble, we fall, we have challenges. In order to accomplish our goal, first and foremost, we need perseverance. We have to keep going. We can't get thrown off by the yiridos on the way. Remember that life is about a sulam mutzavarza, that we have to keep going no matter what. Number two, and in situations where we feel like it's insurmountable nisayon, just remember that moment. You have to dig deep. Dig deep, because every single person has within them a deep reservoir of potential and kochos that we never even imagined existed. And number three, and most importantly, most essentially, which Yitzchak Perlman certainly had, and something that we should all have, is confidence. In order to achieve whatever it is we want to achieve in life, you want to be a congresswoman, you want to be yo'etzet halacha, you want to be a good mother, you want to be a good wife, you want to be a successful business person, whatever it is in life that you want to do, in law, in medicine, or lahavdil in ruchnias and in Torah, the essential, the fundamental ingredient is confidence, is believing in our ability to succeed, to believe in our ability to be great. Chodesh Kislev, the month of Kislev, bechlal, in general, is an auspicious time to be thinking this way. It's an auspicious time, an es ratzon, for us to focus on our dreams in life, our goals in life. But specifically this week, this Shabbos, this week, the days leading up to Parshas Vayetzei are befrat, and specifically an auspicious time, an es ratzon, for us to be thinking about everything that goes into accomplishing and achieving our dreams. The Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, the Kohen Gadol, said that the month of Kislev, Chodesh Kislev, is itself the month of dreams, the month of thinking big, the month of envisioning all those great things that we want to accomplish. Starting from now, starting from this week's parsha, when we're dreaming about Yaakov Avinu's dreams. Not one dream in this parsha, two. The first dream Yaakov Avinu has is the Sulam Mutzavarta that we're talking about. But later on, after Yaakov Avinu has to flee, has to bounce out of Laban's house, already when he's in Chutzpah Aretz, Yaakov Avinu is dreaming about sheep and Nikudim, Atudim, stripes, checkers. One of the most difficult parshas, sugyos in the Torah to understand. But then we have in the coming parsha, Yosef, the master of dreams, Ma'alumim, Ma'alumim, the sun, the moon, the stars bowing down, bundles of wheat bowing down. Then we have Yosef ending up in prison and interpreting the dreams of the butler, the baker. Once Yosef is in prison interpreting their dreams, he begins to interpret Paro's dreams. Fat cows, skinny cows, big wheat, little wheat. Kislev, almost every single year, is the month when all these dreams take place in the parshiot that we're reading in Shul. Kislev is a month of dreams. It's not just the dreams that we're reading about in the Torah. Reb Tzadok says, this is a time where there's an Eis Ratzon, where it's auspicious, where we have an opportunity to develop our own dreams, to think about our own goals, our own aspirations, to envision our own future. He says that the mystical quality of the month can often be seen not just from the parsha we're reading, but you know, the 12 months of the year correspond to the 12 Shvatim, to the 12 major constellations, and to the 12 stones on the Kohen's breastplate, the Choshen, Amni Choshen. Each stone corresponds to a different month. This month is the stone of the Achlama, the amethyst, on the Choshen of the Kohen Gadol. The amethyst, the Achlama, coming from the word Chalom. Because Kislev is a month where we have an opportunity to access, to develop, and to start to think about how we're going to accomplish, how we're going to achieve those dreams. Even if our goal is to get to Shamayim, even if our goal is to accomplish what seems to be the most difficult thing in the world, set the bar high, think big. Because this is a time where we're able to gather our strength to start working toward there. One thing that Martin Luther King, and I asked Martin Luther King Jr. after his famous I Have a Dream speech, and it said, it's like a brilliant mahalach, you know, dreams. Why dafka dreams, you know? We're not going to talk about the difference between a vision and a dream. Soloveitchik talks about that. And Martin Luther King, why dafka dreams? He said, you know, dreams, you never take away a person's dreams. You take away a person's freedom. You lock them in prison. You take away, chas v'shalom, their family. You take away everything that they own and everything that they've ever done. You take away everything. You can't take away a person's ability to think, ability to dream beyond where they are. Dreams help us transcend our current situation, our current location. Maybe we dream about a day where we'll be able to be like real gomlei chasadim. Maybe I dream about a day where I'm gonna be able to pick up any sugya in shas and be able to read it out and understand it. Maybe my dream is one day to be, like, you read these stories about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, you read these stories about Rav Kook, and how he didn't know the difference between different coins of money, because he was so disconnected from the physical. Maybe my dream one day is to, like, look at the world a little bit with the Avos Yisrael and the Avos Hashem, with these great tzaddikim and tzidkanim. Maybe I have these big dreams that seem far away, but now is the time in your lives, the time in our lives, specifically the age that you're at and this opportunity that you're here for this year, but Badafka during Kislev and Badafka during Vayetzei, to start thinking big. People have dreams, nations have dreams. B'shuv Hashem Hashiv Atzion, you're living that dream. We're part of the fulfillment of that dream. that Klal Yisrael have been dreaming about for thousands of years. It's coming true, it's coming alive in front of our eyes. During these parshiyos that we're reading in Kislev, we have the struggle of Yaakov struggling against Esav. We have Yosef imprisoned. We have the Yevanim that we're reading about in Chanukah, when we get to Chanukah, trying to snuff out the light of Klal Yisrael. We have a lot of external things that are holding us back. We have a lot of conflict. We have a lot of resistance. Because when a person has big dreams, and a person has big goals, like Klal Yisrael have big goals of filling the world with holiness, with filling the world with love, filling the world with kindness, filling the world with a God awareness and a God consciousness, with righteousness, so there's going to be stumbling blocks. There's going to be resistance to that. You want to accomplish something special, something big, something holy, something great, there's going to be resistance, necessarily. Dafka, says Reb Tzadok, that's how dreams come true, through hard work. It's not something you just sit back and say, oh, I wish I had this, I wish I had that. We have a beautiful idea of something you want to accomplish, of the type of home you would like to have, the type of family, the type of environment in one's home, so now is the time to work toward it. Dafka during this month. And even if we have resistance, and even if we find stumbling blocks in the way, realize what the chizik that we have from Shlomo HaMelech. We stayed at the end of davening. Many of us stayed after Aleinu. Don't be afraid of enemies. Don't be afraid of wickedness. Don't be afraid of this resistance. What's the next pasuk? Well, what? Oh, so that's what it says in the Siddur, but that's not the next part. Everyone always says that. Al tivri pacha pitom v'shoras v'shorim ki tavo, ki Hashem yihye b'kitzlecha. Don't be afraid of the holocaust of the wicked and of the evil and of the negativity and of the resistance. Don't be afraid of the stumbling blocks on the way to accomplishing our dreams. Why? Ki Hashem yihye b'kitzlecha. Because Hashem will be kitzlecha. You know what that word means? Hashem will be our confidence. Hashem will be our strength. He'll save us from stumbling. We'll protect our feet from stumbling. Ki Hashem yeh b'kislecha, says Reb Tzadok, that's the remedy to Kislev. Because a necessary ingredient, as we said before, fundamental to accomplishing our dreams, to reaching our goals, is confidence. And that we should feel confidence in ourselves. We shouldn't feel like you have this beautiful dream and say, you know what, okay, but little me, I'm never going to be able to accomplish that. Why should we be confident in that? Not because of how good we are at art, or how smart we are, and how well we did in our SATs. Not because of anything that we do. Not because of anything that we have. That's all fake confidence. That's what the Maharal says is called erech chitzoni. When a person values themselves and thinks that there's something we think we're worthwhile and we're good because we have stuff. I have a nice car, I have nice clothing. Because I'm good looking, because people think I'm funny, because I can play guitar very well, because I did really well on my verbals, on my SATs, or I did really well on my math, and I said, that's not what makes me who I am. Not because of something I do, or because of something I have. Not Erech Chitzoni, that's the world of Esav. That's the world of Esav, who is an Ish Sadeh. That's outside. Esav is described in outside physical terms. Yaakov is called a Yoshev Olim. The world of Yaakov Avinu, the world of Klal Yisrael, is an inner world. It's a world where our value is not based on something that you see, based on something that you can touch, based on something that you can measure. Hey, we know in the Navi Ovadia, Esav is compared to kash, to straw. There's a lot of it. It's not about quantities in Klal Yisrael. It's about Yaakov Eish and Beis Yosef Lahava. One little spark can ignite all of that kash. A little bit of inner world of Yaakov Avinu can eliminate the entire outer world, the imaginary world of Chitzonius, of Esav. Erech Pnimi, real value, is just because of who we are. The Lubavitcher Rebbe once said, you know how we know that we matter? You know how we know that we're important? That we're born. Birth means that we matter. That's it. I'm alive, that means that Kadosh Baruch Hu needs me to be doing something in this world. I'm born, I'm here, I'm alive, that means that I matter to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That means that in the Ribono Shel Olam's world, I have erech, I have value, not because I'm good at darts, not because I have a cool looking car, not because I'm funny or I'm good at Nintendo or whatever, I don't know. It's not nothing to do with chitzoni, it's nothing to do with outside that I do or that I have. So I'm alive, I'm here, because I'm a bat melech, I'm a ben melech, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in me.
Because Ki Hashem Yihyeh B'Kitzlecha, nothing other than I'm with Hashem, Hashem is with me. And I have big dreams, and I have a right to think about accomplishing great things in this world. Why? Ki Hashem Yihyeh B'Kitzlecha, because it's Kislev, that's why. Because this is the month of dreams, because the Kohen, the stone that's illuminating the world from the Kohen's breastplate this month is the Achlama. Because it's Parshas Vayetze. Because it's a Sula, Mutav Arsav Erosha Megiyah Shemaima. You can't tell me that what I want to accomplish in life I won't be able to do. You can't tell me that my dreams I won't be able to achieve. Rosha Megiyah Shemaima. The sky's the limit. As Henry David Thoreau once said, you've built castles in the sky, you have big ideas, leave them there, that's where they belong. Now go build foundations underneath it. There's a think big. But don't forget the Mutav Arsa. We have to do things in order to be, to make it real, in order to reach it, to get there. Along the way, it's not simple. Along the way, like we said, there's stumbling, there's difficulties, there's ups, there's downs, there's good moments, there's hard moments, there's moments of pain, there's moments of sadness. But I think Steven Tyler from Aerosmith ripped off David HaMelech Lahavdil. To dream on is great, and to sing through the laughter, through the tears, to accomplish your dreams, that's for sure. But that's David HaMelech said. They said, "Azorim b'dima barina yiktzoru." That when we sow, when we plant with tears, then we'll reap with joy. That's what it means to accomplish our dreams, to accomplish big things. There's going to be a lot of investment. There's going to be hard work. There's going to be tears. You know, Shlomo once said, "Hazorim b'dima, v'rina yiktzoru." Sowing with tears, going through difficulties, and then reaping with joy, harvesting with joy. So that's derech hateva. That's the outside world. That's the klal with the nature. But Jewish people can be outside nature. We have an inner world. We have a great Hashem gives us something, a greater gift. Because of the secret of being real is realizing that kama doesn't belong in that pasuk. This Hazorim Bedima Barina. That when we plant, when we sow with tears and with joy, with our aliyah, with our yirida, with our ups and our downs together, we realize that it's not like there's an isolated moment called a high, and then there's another moment called a low. That there's a Yom Kippur, and then there's a Simchas Pesach Shoeva, and then there's like, you know, these rough Tuesdays, these rough Wednesdays, and Teshuvah and Kislev. I'm feeling lonely and homesick, and like classes are too hard, or they're too this. Those are the same thing. Those are part of the same process. That they're malachim olim v'yor dimbo. It's all part of me. It's all part of my process of making my dreams come true. It's all part of the process of me reaching greatness. It's Zorim Bedima Barina. Sing with me, sing for the years, for the laughters, for the tears. That's part of a dream. It's those ups and downs together. Realize that it's all part of the same process. Okay, I think it's time for us to go, but the blessing of a regular person shouldn't be something that we saw last week, the seriousness of brachos. So a blessing all of us, myself and you and our families, and that we should all be zocha to we shouldn't be afraid to dream big. We shouldn't be afraid to have big dreams. Yaakov Avinu is, you know, dreaming about, like, you know, Rosh HaMegishamayim, and realize that the quality of the dreams that we can cultivate and that we can be zocha to while we're in Yerushalayim, while you're in Eretz Yisrael, is very different than the dreams you might have next year or the year after when we're in Chutzlar. Even Yaakov Avinu, the first time you see Yaakov's dreams, it's Malachi Hashem up and down on the ladder, Rosh HaMegiyah Shemaima. Only a perek and a half later, he's in Lavan's house with the, you know, in Chutzlar, and he's already having dreams about his business, his sheep, striped sheep, checkered sheep, this, that. He's already, his dreams, his whole frame of, his whole subconscious, his whole inner thoughts are all different. So now is the opportunity when we're here, when you're really Shara Shamayim, and you're really Manorah HaMakom Hazeh, to take advantage of the opportunity to dream big, to think big. And halavai, we should all be zochet to have Rosh HaMegiyah Shemaima, and all of our dreams should come true. Have a great week, a good month.